Ladies, gentlemen, geeks of all ages, you are now entering BJ Shea's Geek Nation. Welcome.
Yes, welcome to BJ Shea's Geek Nation. I am the Reverend Enfuego. Across from me is Vicky Barcelona.
Hello.
Hello. The show's namesake, BJ Shea. He's here.
Hey, I know that guy.
I would hope so. And running the boards is Joey D's. I think you might know him, too.
Wow.
Oh, it's Wednesday. Yeah, you might know him. On today's show, BJ will talk comics. We will talk about the Book of Boba Fett, which is a little Fettless on this one. BJ will give us some board game reviews. We'll talk about a TV show on Netflix. And, of course, the Geek Sheet with Vicky B. Vicky, how can people get a hold of us?
Get a hold of us via our website, bjgeeknation.com. You can have our blogs, podcasts, and more. Or just search BJ Shea's Geek Nation on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, iTunes, and the Odyssey app.
And if you don't know how to spell Odyssey, because we spell it a little differently, it's A-U-D-A-C-Y, so you can look all of that up. And we used to have the old radio.com app, but that's changed. So you just look for that, and you can find us on your smart device.
It's Odyssey, not Audacity.
Truth. But there's a little thing, there's a little audaciousness in what we do. Now let's get right into talking about comic books, because it is comic book day. So if you didn't know that, most of the time when you go out to your local comic book store, this is when they get their new comics. And BJ, you've been reading kind of the standard fare for you, which would be Spider-Man and Fantastic Four.
Yeah, I'm reading Spidey. Spidey is, man, oh man, it's like they put out an issue, it seems like, oh, here's another one. I mean, that's great. It's just, it's amazing to me that they like put two issues out a month of this. It's just like, wow. And Doc Ock has been in it, and it involves Ben, Ben Reilly is Spidey's clone, and Spider-Man got his ass kicked, so Ben Reilly's been taken over as Spider-Man because he's basically a clone of Peter Parker. But also he works for an organization called Beyond, and well, they're a shady organization that's doing some shady things. But you know, they're, hey, no, we've got our own version of Spider-Man. We own the copyright, and we're sending him out to fight crime.
I know. Every time you talk about it, I'm just like, ah, corporate Spider-Man, ew.
But this latest issue, The Amazing Spider-Man 87, which we already are into chapter 13. Yeah,
wow.
Yeah, whatever issue that really is. but we're already into chapter 13 of the Beyond Saga. The cool thing is that they have a rotation of artists and writers that are contributing to this. So everyone's handing off the story to somebody else and to somebody else. So amazing variety with, of course, a crazy amount of talented writers and artists that you probably know from other stuff that are participating. And that's been fun. It's been fun seeing Spidey being interpreted by all these different artists and writers. I really enjoyed that. This latest issue, Spidey's trying to recover. He's trying to get back in the game after being in a coma, having his ass kicked so badly that he's really not himself. And I don't know if we've ever seen Spider-Man extended like this, where he's so bad that even like unstrengthed superheroes, like not superpower heroes, are able to do better than him in certain things. And so the Black Cat and Captain America are training him to see if he can get ready. And they took his uniform and they're like, we're not giving you the suit back until we know you actually can be Spider-Man.
Whoa.
And he's like, I'm fine. But they keep kicking his ass. I mean, they really. And he's like, wow. And she's like, look, Steve Rogers, I get he's a super soldier, but I have no superpowers and I'm kicking your ass.
Just destroying you.
And,
oh, no.
He's like, you have that bad luck superpower. She goes, yeah, I know, but I still shouldn't be able to swing on buildings better than you, and I am. And he's like, okay, whatever.
Oh, damn.
And then Steve Rogers is like, yes, I know that I've got, you know, super soldier serum, but you got that Spidey sense in your reflexes. You should be able to be better than me, and you're not. So Spidey is just trying to fight his way back. And in the meantime, Ben Reilly has found out some bad stuff about the Beyond Corporation. He's pissed. Now they're after his girlfriend and apparently the swanky apartment and the great life they've given him. Well, yeah, you know, as you can expect.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, yeah, so there you go. That's what's happening in Spider-Man. And I have to tell you, one of my favorite things that happened in the Fantastic Four, issue 39, was on the letters page. It warmed my heart. And Vicky,
really?
I really thought about you and your dad, because I first read a letter and it was from this girl named Kaylee, and she's like, I've just discovered the Fantastic Four. Oh my God, I love this. I've been reading all the issues, and man, I really love this one issue where you went back and really tied in all these cool storylines from all the different eras of the Fantastic Four. This is so awesome. Thank you, Marvel. I'm like, oh, that's cool. Then I read this other issue. Hey man, I just gave my daughter all my old issues of the Fantastic Four, and I let her just wait, and I didn't realize it was from the same people till I got to the end. And at the end he said, and we have a contest, my daughter and I, whose letter will get published and whose won't. And Marvel said, well, congratulations, you both won this contest. But I'm like, this is so awesome. It's like the magazine, the comic that started it all, the whole Marvel universe. And how about she gets exposed to all the OG stuff for the first time as dad basically just, you know, she found the comics, aww, stored away, and he's so excited. He's like, I never thought she'd be into it like this. And I think of you, Vicky, where you and your dad get to like do some sci-fi geeky stuff from old school.
Which it's funny because like I discovered comics like on my own. Like randomly, my dad didn't really have any of his comic books because he grew up in Mexico and his comics were stored away at my grandma's house, which are no longer there. She ended up tossing them out because I think bugs got in them and wrecked, aww, all the pages. But once my dad started seeing my obsession and we kind of started making the connection between Spider-Man and all these things, like I've grown into a much bigger fan of the universe in the sense of like obsessive fan. But there are certain things my dad and I will do together that we can only do together, like Lost in Space. We have not had a chance to finish the last two episodes because that is his and my show. And same with Spider-Man. Whenever there's a new Spider-Man, we have to go see the movie together.
Aww.
And so I made sure. I'm like, Dad, I'm buying us tickets. Are you good with this time? Let's go. Because we have to go together. And that that has become our thing. And side note, I don't know if you heard, but my dad thought it was the best Spider-Man movie out of all of them.
Well, pro tip, bring the Kleenex for those last two Lost in Space episodes.
Oh, there you go.
That's all I'm going to tell you.
Well,
there's epic stuff that happens that I'm like, oh, I'm like, even as I'm thinking about it now, I'm like, I'm not going to cry.
Okay.
Not gonna cry.
Well, I do have some news that won't make you cry, at least not tears of sadness.
Oh, yeah? What do you got?
When you were saying comic book saga, blah, 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 it reminded me of a comic series I really like called Saga. And it has been on hiatus since June of 2018. Mind you, we are now in 2022, and it's back!
Nice.
It's finally back, issue number 55.
It's back because I have to go back and see. I totally did not know it was back. Oh, my gosh. Well, there it is.
On the 26th.
I have to go back and read Saga at some point. I did not know it was back. I've been checking and checking and checking, and this last time I didn't bother checking. I thought, well, I just checked last time I looked.
Well, like, I got an email yesterday from, like, a Comixology or whatever, and I accidentally clicked on it, and I saw the cover. I'm like, I don't recognize this cover. What?
Yeah.
What?
Wow. And hey, Comixology, what about me? How come you didn't let me know?
When you said, like, the Spider-Man Saga, I'm like, oh, my God, I have to tell you guys. Totally forgot until just now.
Moving on from the comic book chat, we do need to talk about the Book of Boba Fett, which was an interesting episode because it was episode 5. We haven't talked about episode 6 yet because I was seeing everywhere. And I mean, Joe and I have talked about the fact that this season has been very uneven. Like, it doesn't know its own identity. And even I was talking with my wife, who was just like, do we have to watch it? And I'm like, yes, we have to watch it. But people were talking on socials about how great of an episode it was. And how awkward is that? A little bit of a Larry David Curb Your Enthusiasm moment, because the best episode of The Book of Boba Fett has literally no Boba Fett in it.
And that,
even a little bit.
And that is exactly what's wrong with the show. I mean, look, I hate to be mean, but Tamara Morrison is not a good actor. He's just not. He's an okay actor, and he was never meant to be the star of anything, which is why he was a very low character, even in episodes 1, 2, and 3. I'm just going to say it. I know that people were like, oh, yeah, it's great that the same actor that played Jango Fett is in this, but he's just not a good actor. He's an okay actor, but to do these kind of things, to lead a show that's in a universe as crazy as Star Wars, you need Ewan McGregor. You need Pedro Pascal. You need Harrison Ford. You need really good actors. And Tamara is not. He's just not a good actor, and he's leading the whole show. And meanwhile, Min Na Wen. Thank you. She's a good actor.
Yes.
So, I mean, you know, and of course, you know, Matt Berry is a fantastic actor as a droid. And so, yes. And also some of the decisions they've made with, like, well, let's go get the Power Rangers bike gang. You know, I mean, yeah, I mean, so that in itself, you know, is just, that's the problem. The writing has been, what are you doing? And the lead is not a good lead. It just isn't. And I don't like to be mean, but that's what's wrong with it. And Boba Fett, unfortunately, here's the thing. You know who's a real good Boba Fett? The Mandalorian. I mean, that's they did the Boba Fett show before Boba Fett. That's the problem. Is Boba Fett's mysterious and he's kind of like a gunfighter, and that was already done. Unfortunately, this show didn't realize that it shouldn't have been done. It was like, yeah, we love Boba Fett, but love him as a mystery, which a lot of people have said they've taken the mystery out of it.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, there was like, oh, he's just a guy. That's kind of sucky.
And so this episode was essentially an episode that kind of, like, obviously, it does go back to Tatooine because we end up with Din Djarin going back there to make a space hot rod, essentially, and kind of tie it in. And eventually, he's being recruited to help out Boba in Boba's fight. So we're going to be seeing him for these last couple of episodes. So that's super cool on
that
end.
Thank God. Thank
God. But this was really, it seemed like even just like an episodic tease of The Mandalorian Season 3. Because we get a lot more information about what happens after season 2 of The Mandalorian and what the Mando is going to have to go through and deal with, and it really focuses on him using the Darksaber and even what goes around with that, because it's the one sword. It's kind of the mythical religious item for Mandalore, and even like he who has this sword, as long as you've gotten it through combat and have defeated the person who originally had it, it will bring back the glory of Mandalore. And also just dealing with the kind of contentious relationship he has with the zealots that he has done with, like the armorer and the only other Mandalorian that is left of that little crew there. And so I felt it was a really great episode, but also just because of what BJ said, because it was about a good Mandalorian. I mean, of all, you know, of everything with that. And so I feel kind of awkward about it because it's like, yeah, it's a good episode, but it wasn't because it wasn't, you know, the thing.
Also, big shout out to Bryce Dallas Howard, who we know, of course, as Gwen Stacy, as well as many other things, Jurassic Park, Jurassic World, I should say, Ron Howard's daughter. She directed this episode. So, I mean, Bryce is showing that she's got some chops as a director, because this is the first thing I've seen directed by her.
She did. I think she did some Mandalorian episodes.
Yeah,
oh, did she?
Yeah.
No wonder this is the best Boba Fett.
Yeah. And even somebody had said at some point, it was just like, just give Bryce Dallas Howard her own series, like her own Star Wars series or movie, and just let her do it, like her own trilogy at this point in time.
Yeah, she directed, I think, one episode at each season so far of The Mandalorian.
Yeah. And it was chef's kiss. It was an amazing episode. By far the best episode of this series so far. I mean, we've got, I think, two more episodes left because it's a, you know, 7-episode limited series. So we'll have to see where it goes with this at this point. But, I mean, I'm not really... I'm a completionist. We're nerds. We're going to watch it anyway.
Nope.
But this is probably going to be one that I will not revisit anytime soon.
Yeah, there's stuff about this that I like. I like, you know, I really like the storyline with the sand people. I think it's really cool when, you know, you actually give three dimensions, because old school storytelling back in, you know, way back in the first Star Wars, oh yeah, they're savage, horrible creatures. And in reality, nobody is. So I really, you know, especially if they're sentient at all. And they were even considered more savage, horrible creatures when Anakin went on his temper tantrum and killed them all.
Yeah, right.
You know, so it's nice that they were able to show that, wait, not all sand people are like that. And I felt like, okay, that's cool. And I really like that storyline. But again, the worst part of that storyline was Boba. His acting skills are not, he's not charming. He's not interesting. You know, look, like the Mandalorian doesn't say much, and he speaks softly and carries, you know, a big stick kind of a guy. But there is the way he delivers his lines, and also big shout out to Helen Sadler, and she plays, of course, the Guildmaster. The way she delivers her lines, those are good actors. And I'm sorry, Tamara, but you're just, you know, you're just not. You're just not on their level, and it shows. It's like watching a movie where you go, all right, they got a couple of good actors, and then everybody else is a B actor, and boy, okay.
Exactly. So, I mean, we'll watch it, and then we'll move on, and we'll get to other series in the Star Wars universe.
I think Emily Swallow is who I'm thinking of, by the way, because she's the armorer.
I want to make sure
Emily's the one I want to give credit to, because, I mean, really good acting, man. And then Tamara.
Yeah, exactly. Well, moving on from that, let's get a little board game talk, because it's been a while. The last time we had you on, BJ, you talked a lot of TV because we had to catch up from the new year. But it's also, you've been spending time playing some board games as well.
Yes, I have, because that's what a kid like me does.
Right.
You know, there's a company called Board and Dice who are really making some big splashes in the world of board gaming just because of the design. David Turksey, you guys might remember, in Anachrony, and there's a bunch of TGAs, Tenetawanu, Tabanusi, Trismegistus, and there's other T games I can't even pronounce. And they've been putting out some great games to the point where I'm feeling like, man, if you want a game with good mechanics and depth to it, which, you know, Anachrony is an amazing worker placement game, but it is heavy. But it is such a great game. And so Board and Dice came out with a new game called Origins First Builders. And I love this. It's a civilization. Even though Josh and I fight about this, it's a worker placement game, but it also really has Civ game elements where, you know, you're building your civilization. And they literally say, hey, leave your mark on history by guiding the most successful civilization to victory. So, I mean, there, you know, and you're building stuff in the midst of placing your workers. But this I love because aliens have visited your planet. And like we thought with Egypt, like, did aliens help the early Egyptians do what they were doing?
if you watch the History Channel, yes.
Yeah. In this game, that's exactly what's going on. The aliens are here. Their ships are landed. And it's our job as the archons of the leaders of our civilizations to send our people out there to go commune with the aliens and learn how to do cool stuff, like how to have a better military, how to be better at politics, how to create great buildings, how to basically study the science of astrology. I mean, all of that is being done in this game via the placement of worker placement dice. And the cool thing about this game is that obviously when you send your people off to go talk to the aliens, they get smarter when they come back, which means you tick up your die to a higher pip, and that will allow you to do better things in the game, which I love that whole idea. So it's, you know, at its heart, it's worker placement, and it's really good. We weren't sure if we would like it, but we said, hey, it's Board and Dice. We'll give it a shot. And it's available, you know, right now. You can just buy it wherever games are sold. It wasn't a Kickstarter or anything.
Oh, nice.
And I don't think it was. Boom. Origins First Builders. Let's see. Do we have a price on this? You can get it for like $50 in a lot of places. I know our buddies at Zulu's Board Game Cafe and Bothell have it.
Nice.
And Bothell, Washington. But you can get it probably wherever you get your games, your FLGS. Origins First Builders, I recommend this.
Nice. That sounds a lot of fun with that one. Now, this is an interesting show because it looks like it's on Netflix, and you said you saw the movie The Silent Sea.
Yes.
It looks like it's another Korean show or movie that recently...
It's actually a TV series.
It's a TV series. Okay,
yes.
Yeah. And so it's another one. I mean, obviously, this seems like it's going to be a lot different from Squid Game, but it is another Korean series, and you did see it.
Yes, and I don't know when it comes to how people say names, whether or not it's Bai Duna, Bay Duna, or Duna Bay. But Vicky, you'll remember her. She played Soon in Sense8.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Yeah.
Oh,
so she stars in this, and unfortunately, it's Korean based, which means she's going to be speaking in Korean as opposed to where she spoke in English in Sense8. So I need to really go with the dubbed version. I was told that, you know, go dubbed, because sometimes the subtitles themselves just aren't really good enough because they don't pay subtitlers a lot of money. So I'm watching it, but it's a really really fascinating show about a bunch of this crew that's got to go to the moon because of some mysterious craziness that happened at a lunar research station. Takes place in the not so distant future, and it's got an alien feel to it as far as like what the F is going on, you know, like everything is scaring you as they turn a corner and stuff. And it's well done, a surprise to me, but not a surprise if you watch, and I forget the name of that, the space junk movie that was also a Korean movie that was well done, where they were space junkers and they had the little child that was special.
That's what, like when you were mentioning this show, and it literally, I think it was like something like a space junker.
Yeah, I can't remember the name of the movie. I'm so bad at this. I am really excited about what we're seeing from Korean movies and television with Squid Game and with that space junk movie. And now with The Silent Sea, I'm like, you know what? This is awesome that Netflix is getting this material that we wouldn't even have access to because, you know, like what, you know, who would care about something where you can't really get, you know, you don't know the language, but they're putting out some great stuff.
And we were pretty close. It was Space Sweepers.
That's it. Space Sweepers. Yeah. Space Sweepers was good. Of course, Squid Game was a phenomenon. Mm-hmm. And The Silent Sea, if you're a sci-fi fan, really, so far they've got me hooked. I'm a couple of episodes in, and it is is it Netflix, Rev? Is it available on Netflix? I always forget where
it was. Yeah, Silent Sea is available on Netflix.
You know, I love this. It's just like, whoa, I've been so happy with like the sci-fi product that's shown up that I didn't know anything about on Netflix and Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
So stoked. And this is a good one. I think that if you're a sci-fi fan and you like Squid Game, you like Space Sweepers, you're going to like the Silent Sea TV show.
Excellent. Well, now it is time for
The Geek Sheet with Vicky B.
All right, Vicky, what do you got for Wednesday?
Wednesday. It's comic book day.
Oh, yeah.
Woo! One of my favorite things, and I think this is in movies, TV shows, and in comics, is when either it's very obvious or just like a subtle nod, when things kind of like mingle together and become like a mini crossover, even if it's just like a nod to something.
Okay.
And Ranker put out a list of superheroes you didn't realize had interconnected origins.
Oh, all right.
So, did you know that Jessica Jones was actually on the same field trip as Spider-Man when the radioactive spider bit him?
Really?
Mm-hmm.
No.
So Jessica Jones made her Marvel comic debut in 2001, but the writers portray her character as though she existed for far longer. And one such retcon is the revelation that Jessica and Peter Parker were teammates on the new Avengers series, and they actually went to high school together. And not only did Jessica once have a little crush on him, she also happened to be there for the most important day of his life because they kind of meet up. She finds out he's Peter Parker because they're teaming up. And she's like, oh, my God, you're Peter. I had a crush on you. Oh, my gosh. And, of course, Luke Cage is there, her husband.
That's awkward.
And he's like, you did?
So she was on the field trip.
Yeah. I mean, she's obviously came way later than Spider-Man. It's retcon, but that was kind of cool. It like intermingling.
Yeah, I bet. I could go back and look at that issue where he got bit and
she's
see if
right
I could
there.
Find somebody who looks like a Jessica Jones kind of looking
person. Maybe that's exactly what they did. They're like, how can we tie these in together?
Right. Does she have purple hair? No. Did you also know that the radioactive goop that blinded Daredevil also created the Ninja Turtles? For those
what?
Who don't know, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles were not just cartoons. They were a comic book at one point, although they were much, much darker in the
were
comics.
They not, were they ever in the Marvel Universe?
I don't know.
That's an interesting stretch to be able to say that the same thing that created Daredevil created the Turtles. I know they were way back in the day. I think they were in an independent magazine.
Mm-hmm.
So when the Ninja Turtles came into the comic book form, they were actually intended the characters to be somewhat of a parody of the era's mainstream comic books, which included Frank Miller's epic Daredevil run. The first telling of the Turtles' origin story included heavy visual hints that the radioactive material that mutated them was the same goop that blinded young Matt Murdock, giving him the powers of Daredevil. Of course, fearing legal action from Marvel Comics, Eastman and Laird could not make the connection any more explicit than that.
That makes sense.
That's like the inside joke. Like, this is really what it is, but we can't say it is that.
Oh, that's pretty cool, actually, that Eastman and Laird did. So that's really, going back to old school, and they decided to give a nod like that. That's cool.
That is actually like that pretty funny. And even, like, I had to look it up to look, and then they even said that Splinter's name was a tip of the hat to Matt Murdock's mentor, Stick.
Of course.
Oh, okay.
I really like that. That's cute.
I love, like, little nods and Easter eggs like that. This one I had no idea. It's that the Vision was actually made from the refurbished body of the original Human Torch.
Oh, this is the Torch robot. Of the 40s.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, yeah.
So you actually read this this line or the storyline?
Well, I know I don't know about the Vision being made from the Torch, but I know who the original Human Torch was, an android. Mm-hmm. He wasn't real.
Really?
I remember that.
A human being, yeah.
Yeah, and I think BJ even brought that up previously. So
Captain America era, I think. Okay. You had Submariner, the Human Torch, and Captain America hanging out in the 40s, if I'm not mistaken.
So, yeah, like this, the article saying that the Human Torch was Marvel's or one of the earliest characters, and even predating the name of Marvel Comics, and he actually wasn't human. Known as Jim Hammond, the OG Torch was an android that fought alongside Captain America and the invaders of World War II. So by the time Storm and the Fantastic Four came into existence, the old Human Torch was already phased out of print, like the majority of Captain America's war buddies. So he popped back into continuity when the decommissioned body gets taken by Ultron and used as the base upon which to create Vision, everyone's favorite artificial Avenger. So I did not know that.
Yeah, neither did I. That's kind of crazy.
Another, again, this is like blowing my mind. These are so random. The Hulk randomly got involved in Rocket's origin story.
Rocket Raccoon?
Yeah. Sorry,
okay.
I thought you said something else.
No, Rocket, you said Rocket. You said Rocket. I was just making sure.
I thought I said a bad word.
So Rocket Raccoon from Guardians of the Galaxy, the Hulk somehow was involved?
Yeah, and the image looks like it's like 80s, maybe early 90s kind of artwork. So Rocket, as we know, his origin story has only been kind of touched on in the movies. We don't really know exactly what happened. But Rocket is originally a therapy animal at a cosmic insane asylum run by robots. And when the robots get bored of their job, they perform horrific genetic experiments on the therapy animals. Jeez. So they can take care of the patients instead. And that's how Thor's favorite rabbit was created.
Wow.
Oddly enough, Rocket's origins are first told in the pages of the Incredible Hulk comic. Through a series of strange circumstances, the Hulk ends up on Rocket's home planet of Halfworld, where he gets involved in the insurrection and learns about all the not-raccoon's backstory. Because he's not a raccoon.
Yeah, he's not really a raccoon.
He then helps Rocket blast off for the first time in the beginning of his life as a cosmic critter.
Wow.
Like, all right. Very old school.
And I have heard that Guardians 3 might explore a little bit more with Rocket. So we might see something, maybe not totally Hulk with that, but we know we're going to see some other Avengers-type characters, especially with Thor and maybe some others that will be in Guardians. So it'll be interesting to see where this all goes.
Do we have time for one more?
One more! One more.
So did you know that Captain Marvel used to hang out with the Thing in the Air Force?
Really?
BJ, no, yes, no.
Captain Marvel, no, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't think I know about this. This might be from a bunch of issues I haven't read.
So before her encounter with the Kree, Psyche, Magnetron, Danvers was already a hero for working for the U.S. Air Force and NASA, and she teamed up with a number of notable individuals. So while at the Air Force Special Operations Divisions, Danvers ran missions with Nick Fury and Wolverine, and she also shared an adventure with a young pilot named Benjamin Grimm.
That's right. He was a pilot, which is why he was able to help Reed basically kidnap the rocket.
So at that point, he was a few years from traveling into space and transforming into the Thing and becoming a founding member of the Fantastic Four. But years down the road, Grimm and Danvers find themselves as teammates on the new Avengers.
Do they recognize each other? It might be kind of hard when you're just a big yellow thing at that point.
It's like, you look kind of familiar, but I can't really place it.
That had to be sort of a retcon from somewhere, I bet, because I don't remember that at all from the stories I like the early Fantastic Four.
This looks a little bit more new.
Yeah.
Probably like 2000s.
And that kind of, that would make sense. I mean, because considering how old the Fantastic Four are, and I just don't know how old, especially Carol Danvers is Marvel.
I don't mind the retcon. Mm-hmm. I mean, why not? They're both in the Air Force. Do it.
And there's different storylines for everything in different multiverses, so anything can happen.
Yep.
There is a lot more on this list. They're really cool, so check out our Facebook page to check them all out. And until next time, stay nerdy.